shows what they're going to spend the money on. So the first thing you need is an adopted budget that says what you're going to spend the money on. Second thing you need is approval of the voters for the levy. So you need two things.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Monroe.
Unless, of course, they have a tax base which would encompass the entire amount of the local budget.
Well, we're saying that, that they got the voter approval a long time ago. They had to have voter approval at some point for that levy. It might have been 20, 50 years ago, you don't know, that had to be approved. All right, so that's the two things you need, voter approval and your adopted budget. Then, as for levies, what types of levies are there? Well, first of all, I like to divide it this way. You have permanent levying authority. All right, the most common example of that is tax base. So a tax base. The tax base is permanent levying authority. Once your tax base is approved, you can levy that. In fact, you can increase it at 6% a year for every year thereafter, as long as you can continue to levy it. So permanent levying authority. This is the most common kind. Tax base can only be adopted at a new one at a primary or a general election. And second, there are some sort of holdover levies that are still around. You see them in cities. You can't get new ones, but call them continuing levies. And those are old rate-based levies that exist. And I bring them up mainly because in tax plan revisions, you're going to have to deal with what they're going to do about these continuing levies and how they work on the AV ballot funding and all that, because when the tax plan went through, nobody thought about these. In fact, they didn't think about any kind of serial levy. So that's going to be something you're going to have to really understand what these levies are, you know, to understand what we did with them in the tax plan revisions. So you have these two kinds. The tax base are the only ones that are still can be adopted. And then we have a whole series of levies that I call them temporary levying authority. Again, for school districts particularly, the most common are one-year special levies. That's just, you go to the voters and you ask, can I levy $1 million next year? They say yes or no. One-year special levy. It's only 1 year. That year's over. It's in. It's done. Second, you have serial levies. Now, I'm going to divide it into two categories. Fixed dollar serial levies. Fixed dollar serial levies and fixed rate serial levies. All a serial levy is a levy for more than 1 year. Fixed dollar levy, serial levy, is a levy for more than 1 year. It's the same dollar amount every year. $1 million a year for 3 years. They can run from three to...
Senator Trill has a question.
Yeah. Obviously, there are some continuing levies that are serial, that are permanent, that just go on forever.
That's right.
Okay. And then those are serial, too. And these two temporary serials...
People argue about whether to call these a serial levy or not.
But what are, give me an example of one of those.
City of Salem has a park continuing levy. Park.
Forever?
Forever.
Just to pay for the parks. Is it very big?
I don't know.
Okay.
Not big enough.
Okay.
And they're very common in cities. They got big guys a lot.
The fixed rate, C under temporary, something we gave authority in 1977, wasn't it?
Right.
Which, in my view, was a mistake, but I wasn't prevailing.
So the fixed dollar serial levies, fixed dollar, can run for 3 to 10 years. 3 years if it's operating levy, up to 10 years if it can be up to three if it's a operating levy, and up to 10 if it's for capital construction. A fixed rate serial levy can only go up to 3 years. But in any case, they run out eventually, so I call them temporary.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Monroe.
Did I hear you say that the continuing levies are rate-based levies? For example, the Salem Park levy is a rate-based levy?
Yes.
So it's so many cents per thousand or...
Yeah, there is one distinction you might make between the fixed rate serial and the continuing as well, is that this grows at true cash value. This one grows at assessed value. And the reason for this is that these continuing levies are rooted in Oregon's past in a way. And when this tax-based legislation came in, I don't know whether they're grandfathered or what, but they're in. Oregon went through all those processes of changing its ratio from, it was sort of mixed across the state, and we had an equalization process, then they went to a 25% ratio, and then to a 100% ratio. They specifically built into the statutes on the continuing levies an adjustment process so that if you ever change the statewide ratio, it automatically adjusted the continuing levy, so it always grew a true cash. So when we put in the statewide ratio, that language is still there, so these still grow at true cash. So they really aren't fixed rate to assess value, even though that's what we use now. They grow at true cash. These grow at assessed. Because these are, in fact, fixed rates, and the rate is charged against assessed value, which we'll get into later. But so these grow at true cash, and these grow at assessed.
That's going to be confusing.
Do you understand the difference?
Well, I understand the difference. I don't understand how they can collect it, though, that way.
They really are not fixed rate levies in the sense that they are fixed rates to true cash, but there's an adjustment process built in the law to make sure that if you go on a different ratio, that you're going to adjust so it still grows at true cash. That's just the way it's been always in there. And when we put in the 5% assessment limit and created the difference, it didn't affect that language. So there's still that left.
Okay.
And that's another reason why you're going to get into doing the tax plan revision. Okay. Then you've got bond levies. In this case, the voters approve the issuance of the bonds, and then whatever the local district needs to pay off those bonds, it can levy on the property tax. So you don't approve a specific amount of levy, you approve the issuance of the bonds. And fourth, and I put these in a separate category, they really are.
Excuse me, Jim, but when that district goes out to, if they're paying for that bond out of their current operating budget, they have to ask for that in their budget, do they not, and include that in the total amount.
Yeah.
So it's not an automatic assessment.
Yes, in the case of bond levies and serial levies, a lot of times, and most times, they're dedicated for a specific purpose, and so you have to have a separate fund, and there's all kinds of stuff in the local budget law you have to go through. Levy those things. On urban renewal levies, those are a separate entity entirely, and we could probably spend the whole hour on those if you want. But just to know that they're there is probably important.
Senator Hanlon?
Jim, do we still have only two serial levies in the state, one in Washington and one in Clackamas County, or somebody else?
The fixed rate. Fixed rate, you mean?
Fixed rate serial.
I've heard estimates anywhere from 2 to 7, so I'm not sure which is right. But there's not very many. The people up in local budget that are reviewing the budgets, one person does half of them, the other person does the other half, and she said that she saw 2 and a half she did. She doesn't know how many are in the other half. So there's at least 2, and I heard somebody else told me 7. I don't remember who said that.
Those really get a boost from the new tax plan, which restricts the growth in assessed value, thus increases the rate, wouldn't it?
No, because this is going to be fixed. The way it is in there now,
okay,
it's a
fixed
rate. And so the holding down of the value is going to mean less growth because it's a fixed rate. This grows at assessed value, this grows at
Chairman, you and I have talked about this before, and I think we at least one time we agreed that that's a trifle out of sync with the whole philosophy of property taxes. You think the committee might want to look at that this time, or
the
3-year limitation and the assessed value restriction maybe alleviate?
Well, I think it would probably keep it from a repeal from passing. That's why I didn't look at any more depth last session. We might review that to see if there is interest in changing it. But there was some lobby groups that supported that, and we would probably be facing that opposition. So maybe we'd want to count some noses.
Okay. I'm less concerned about it now that I recall that there's a three-year limitation
limit,
on it and the restriction on the values.
The problem is when you go out in the public and start explaining how easy it is to understand the system, and you finish and there's somebody there that says, that's not the way ours works. Senator Trill.
Our continuing levies sort of holdovers from the past, do we find governmental jurisdictions approving continuing levies?
You cannot approve a new one.
You can't approve a new one. Okay.
The safety net would have been kind of a continuing, wouldn't it?
That wasn't there.
Oh, you're lucky.
But you can't now.
They are holdovers from the past. You cannot get a new continuing levy.
How can you do away with continuing
levy? I imagine a district that you would either have to pass a statute that would get rid of them at the state level, or the district would just have to choose not to levy. And my understanding is that because those funds are dedicated for a specific purpose, some cities don't levy the full amount of their continuing levies. I don't know whether that's true. That's just what I've heard. I was going to mention one more thing on that. Remember, we said back here the independence of the levy from the value. Well, the exceptions to that, which I've erased now, but in the outline we have here, were the urban renewal levies. That's one of the exceptions. But the value is very much tied into the amount of the levy. And those fixed rate levies, the continuing levy and the fixed rate serial levy. Those are the exceptions there. Still, if you look at the total picture, relatively mild. All right, then the only third thing I was going to talk about on the levy side was what passed last session. The AB ballot. In effect, the AB ballot system was sort of a soft limit on local government in the sense that it says that we're going to take a base year levy, which in most cases is 79-80 levy, and we're going to say you can increase your base year levy by population and CPI. Population of the district and CPI, and we're going to calculate what's called an adjusted levy. Now, I don't know why they call it an adjusted levy, but that's what they call it. You take your base year levy, multiply by population and CPI, you get an adjusted levy. Now, if you as a district want to levy more than that, you have two choices. One, two ballots. That is, voters, can I levy up to the limit? That's the A ballot. And two, can I levy over the limit up to X amount? That's the B ballot. So two ballots. Four, a new tax base. You can always go in a primary or a general election for a new tax base. In fact, in some cases you have to. And the state will fund. First of all, you don't have to break it into two components based on the adjusted levy. And secondly, the state will always pay its 30% share of that new tax base.
Or you can do both.
Or you can try anything you want.
In that order.
Yeah.
Isn't it true, Mr. Chairman, isn't it true that a lot of districts, in fact, went ahead in the spring and passed the A and the B ballot and then came back and went for a new tax base in the fall and passed that new tax base at least partially by arguing informing the people that it would save them taxes now to pass a new tax base because then the B portion, which they had already approved, would be subject to the 30%.
Some districts.
I know that my district did that. The district where I teach, but Tigard did that, and I had heard that other districts did that, and I would like to see information, statistics on how many districts, in fact, did that.
We have all the levies in the computer, so we'll be able to do
something like that.
Okay. How many passed the B budget first and then came back and passed a new tax base to cover that B budget?
We have all the levy elections, tax base elections in the computer by election date, by district, by county.
We can find out how many times that happened. In effect, what they're doing here is they're canceling this and then going with the tax base instead. And as you'll see, when you go through the AB ballot portion of that, those revision bills, is that when you get a new tax base, it automatically updates your base year levy if that's the only levy you've got. So you can get a new base. base your levy for purposes of the next year's calculation of your levy. Jim. So the basic idea, though, still remains. You have some concept of a base year levy, grows by population and CPI, and you get an adjusted levy, and if you want to levy over that levy, you have two choices, two ballots, or a new tax base.
Jim, do we have information on the percentage of increase that the population and CPI would have given each district? Is that in the computer too? That is, what the A ballot could have been in percentage terms, what kind of an increase would that have given each district?
We and don't thus have the base year levies in there now. And I don't know how what that would involve getting them in there.
Well, what the information I would just be interested in is what kind of an increase, an average increase around the state for school districts, let's say, did the A ballot provide?
We could get the total amount of levies for the previous year for school districts and then look at the total amount of A ballots. I mean, we might be able to piece something together.
Maybe well, if you could get the detail. Yeah, you wouldn't know by individual district what the right index was.
You know the CPI.
You know the CPI.
But the population.
The population.
Well, that's we don't have that in the machine, but that wouldn't be as big a problem as getting these base year levies in there.
Okay.
That's the real problem.
Senator Trump?
I think in many instances, the base year levy was fairly unstable, wasn't it? But, often, for something happened the next year to what you could count on as the base, like a decrease in state funds, timber tax funds decrease, or something like that, so that they would end up having to go to the B ballot simply to get enough money to fund their existing program, and that happened many places.
The what you're alluding to is another basic fact about the AB ballot limitation, is that it only applies to the property tax levy. So if there's something else going on in the district's budget, like a big increase or a big decrease in some other revenue that they have,
so it's not the base year,
that's not part of the property tax, that's not going to be reflected in this calculation. You're not saying, let's take their base year budget in increasing in a population and CPI, and then letting you levy the property tax that it would take to get your next year's budget up to that. We're only putting, this is only on the property tax levy. So if you've got something else funny going on in there, it won't be a population and CPI limit on the budget. It's only on the tax levy. And I think that's what you're saying.
I didn't say it very well.
We faced that issue and decided to go with levies. Remember,
we didn't realize how much difficulty there would be out of the state.
But I think that favored the districts. That decision favored the districts because it would allow them to gain revenue in other areas that were not part of the levy and not count that in the limitation. So that decision that we consciously made was made to some extent at the request of the taxing districts, who said, look, we might be getting these funds for a special purpose, and if you applied that to the total budget, that limitation, that would reduce that A ballot more than it would if it was just applied to the levy.
I guess what I'm saying is, argue about it, it's just that the AB ballot thing really complicates the picture and makes it very difficult for some taxing jurisdictions to even fund their existing programs. So I think we ought to look at it very carefully.
You remember your commercial from last session.
Yes, I know, and I was right.
In your heart, you knew you were right.
Senator, have you been able to get any reading on sentiment in the House committee to rework A and B at all?
I think they're like us. I think they're willing to look at the practice, what happened out there. And as Senator Trill pointed out, if in fact there's something going on that skews one, that's a funny choice of words, that one district might be in a less, this is hard to explain, one district might be better off than another simply because of these other implications to the tax system. that we might be able to iron out so that there's an adjustment made for those who suffer a loss of some funds, perhaps, or something, so that they could ask for last year's programming.
Well, I can see that some of the tax experts out there have mastered the A and B ballot to their own advantage.
Yes.
Described by Jim.
That's the problem.
I don't remember us thinking that that would happen.
Well, no, I think people thought it would be advertised quite heavily that the state was paying 30%, and that's why we had some limits.
Well, I meant the getting an A and B ballot in May and a new tax base based upon the success of A and B in September.
But recall the legislature for some years now has been promoting tax bases. That's been the thrust of what we've tried to do here. And we knew, that's why we didn't put bonded indebtedness in the program, as you'll recall. We were told that we'd be building art centers all over the state, which isn't bad. It's just that the state would be paying 30% of it, and that's why those the bonds were exempted from the program. And so that I think we knew that it would be advertised with some success, but in a direction that the legislature had already been pushing.
I wouldn't argue with that either, because the establishment of new tax bases is one of the things which is a plus.
Senator Jernstad.
Well, taking Senator Trollo's statement a little further, though, isn't it very likely that, yes, it wasn't fortunate that maybe they didn't increase their program or were not able to, but if they hadn't had the A and B ballot, maybe they would have had even less of a cut in program because the budget wouldn't have passed in the first place. Isn't that possible? Yeah, it might be too bad.
Could be possible, but I think this, for a lot of people, has made a really difficult situation.
Yeah, but it gave them, they gave them a program, right?
Well, I think if you look back, we don't really have many school districts or other districts that eventually didn't get something passed.
That's right. Prior to the A and B ballot, we remember schools that didn't pass anything, hence had no tax base at all.
Right.
And as the staff just pointed out, recall also that the levy increases apparently were the largest this year in the history of the state. So they, for the most part, taxing districts were very successful in their efforts at the local level, and in part because of the tax plan. I don't think there's any argument there that in part it promoted new tax bases and again. I look at it differently than many. Many people think that's bad, but I tend to think that many local governments were far, far behind, and it simply allowed them to do some catching up to provide those services where inflation's killing.
You know, Mr. Chairman, we had an interesting, I got involved in this Marion County fiasco. We ran into this AB situation where there was no way where we had these major losses of which we have to accommodate within our budget period. We had one hell of a time trying to do that. We're going to be struggling with that for the next until we can get a tax base established to accommodate that. But I'm not sure that was all bad. I must tell you, from the fiscal management of that county, maybe that kind of gyration was well worthwhile for temporarily handling the funds. We had a terrible time trying to reconcile.
Senator Henry. Question to Rich. Rich, are we going to be able to make any sort of an educated guess as to whether the A and B ballot had some effect on the fact that there was a greater increase in their tax rate? Was that just a fact of inflationary life?
I think Jim has the historic data. He'll go over in a minute with you. But the levy increases historically have only been slightly greater than 10%. Now they've jumped from year to year. They haven't jumped around to be 17%, but they've jumped around, sometimes dropping below 10, sometimes 12, 13, 14%. I think you could, I don't know, I think it's really a subjective judgment. You could make a judgment that people effectively perceive the AB ballot process. They generally, by the data, adopted A ballots. Generally, B ballots were tougher to come by. Generally, A ballots last year gave you 14% plus a population factor. if on an average you had a 2% population factor, you got a 16% increase in your A ballot. That alone is quite a bit above the historic rate of growth of levies in Oregon. So I think you could argue that the A ballot being so high in the first year probably encouraged people to adopt an A ballot. And that probably gave people a higher levy than normally they would have gotten under a purely levy election system that we had before. But I think it's really subjective. How do you measure how it did in relation to what it would have done otherwise?
And plus, Mr. Chairman, you also have to figure in the 30% a little lower.
Sure, was an attraction because then you knew you were getting it covered. But still, the A ballot being as large as it was probably helped lead to those increases.
In effect, the A ballot gave a blessing, possibly, to a higher levy than the district had been accustomed to asking for.
On the average, with exceptions, probably.
Sure. Yeah. It's very hard to generalize when you have so many tax increases here. It's not going to be affected. So.
Chairman, do we have statistics on the number of districts that needed to go to a B ballot just to fund their district?
I doubt. All we could do is probably ask each district, because I don't think there's anything in the data itself that would tell you that. That would again be somewhat subjective.
We can show you how many went for a B ballot, and of those that went, how many got it. By type of district, by place, so you can see all that data.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Monroe.
As I understand it, one of the problems that districts faced, and one of the reasons that so many of them had to go to B ballots, is because those districts, especially school districts that were rapid growth districts, the population increase that they got on their A ballot was the previous years, like from 2 years ago to 1 year ago, population increase. And if in the year that they're going for the budget to fund, they projected a greater, you know, population growth, such as is happening in many of the suburban districts around Portland, Tigard, Beaverton, and so on, that if they hadn't gone for a B ballot, they'd have had to drastically cut many of the existing programs. So the use of that population figure in the formula can kind of skew things because of the fact that you have to go on known population statistics, which means known population growth, percentage of growth. You know, the last firm year you have a population for, and then subtract the previous year. And sometimes that doesn't give you an accurate reflection. Also, isn't it true that population figure cannot be less than zero in that formula? So you can't have a negative population growth? Yeah. So that tends to benefit those districts that may be losing population. But and my understanding is that this formula works much better for districts that are staying even or losing population than those districts that are growing, particularly those that are growing rapidly.
Okay, why don't you go ahead.
This pretty much wraps up the levy process. Just to review a little bit, I said there was, by and large, the levy and the value are independent. And in the levy section, we dealt with what you need to get a levy, in other words, approval by through the budget process, and secondly, approval by the voters. And we went over the types of levies and then the AB ballot process. And from there, we're done with that. We'll go into the value. Determination of value. And it's a little bit different this year because I think I found in trying to present this that it works best to start right off with what you did last session, two classes of property. It's almost easier to explain things if you begin right with that. Two classes of property. Homestead and all of it. Homesteads are owner-occupied personal residences. is all of it. So beginning with that.
Excuse me. Also included in a homestead is the land necessary for that residence.
Right.
Isn't that true?
Right.
Not necessarily necessary for the residence. It's up to an acre, isn't it?
Well, it's up to the acre or the minimum
zone
lot size.
Okay. So it is.
Even that, it's not that.
Yeah.
If you've got 30 acres, the minimum is 20, so you can't split off the other ends. Then you get the whole 30. So
it is, then Senator Monroe's statement was truly accurate. It is the amount of land necessary for the house. There are some exceptions to that, though, isn't there? Like
well,
out on, you go out on EFU land, where you have a 40-acre minimum lot size, they don't get the 40 acres.
No, if you're on a special assessment, that land will not qualify for homestead.
Yeah. So in the case of farmland, it's up to an acre, is it not, or something like
well,
that?
Well, it depends. If the farmer doesn't want to put that on farm deferral, then they can take the whole 40 acres if that's minimum losses, I think. I don't know. I presume. I just know a farmer would never want to do that.
No, he'd be much better off under the special.
Well, if he could divide it, he might not. If he could...